Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. The following program is a PodcastOne.com presentation.
Leaving our apartment, and it was just one of those like really weird feelings of like, gosh, I don't know what state we'll be in when we come back to this apartment in a few days, like, you know. And of course, like, the thought runs through your mind, like, will I even make it back to this apartment in a few days?
Hey.
Hi.
Awesome?
Yes.
Is your name really awesome?
Yes.
You know, there's that trope, fight like a girl, and I think guys wish that they could fight like girls because they can kill you with words. They can ruin your life with words. Like, we don't even need fists.
Another week, and yet more proof of what you already know if you're a regular listener of the show, and that is that everybody has a fascinating story to share. You just have to know where to look for it. And on that note, I'm going to say something because my wife is always telling me that I'm the worst self-promoter. But I was actually commissioned by The Atlantic to write an article on this topic for their city's website. It's called City Lab. And the article I came up with is all about getting past small talk with people. There's a lot of tips in there on easy ways to actually connect. And with holiday parties and that kind of thing in full swing this time of year, I'd encourage anybody to check it out, especially if you're like me and you're easily drained by awkward small talk. So I did put a link to the article in the show notes if you want to read it. If you don't want to read it, one of the things I mention is sometimes the key to this is picking a question that is thoughtful, but not too invasive, not too personal. And it also helps if the question is actually something that has been on your mind. That way it's more authentic. And also, I harp on this a lot, be sure to listen carefully to the response and also let the person know that you are listening carefully. So last Saturday, I was out with Bob. He's the guy that edits this podcast. And with both of us now being in our late 30s, I'm actually less than a year now away from the big 4-0. We started talking about the whole cliche you always hear, 40 is the new 30 or 50 is the new 40, whatever decade you want to choose. And we eventually landed on this question for today's episode. Do you feel your age? Again, thoughtful without being too invasive. Do you feel your age?
No. I don't feel my age. I have a 2-year-old and I definitely don't feel my age. I still feel like I'm 24.
And how old are you?
32.
You're 32, so there's an 8-year gap between how you feel and what you actually are. Why do you choose 24?
That's a really hard question. Maybe, I don't know, I still feel energetic. I find a good balance between, you know, being a dad, good career, but then still being able to hang and go out and party.
When he and his coworker hopped in the car, they just left this small but really popular music venue, and they needed a ride to another small but very popular music venue a little bit further north. And they were carrying stuff for a party, like plastic silverware and aluminum platters. They threw that stuff in the trunk. Turns out, these guys are the private events team for both the venues I mentioned.
Music touches everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And there's something special about going in and renting a place with a big stage and them being able to bring in a band, you know, and have that unifying aspect that is music, which is really cool.
Working with bands from all over the country and even overseas.
I made a promise. My high school self made a promise that I would never work a job where I had to wear a suit. And I've kept true to that, which is kind of nice.
That's big.
Yeah.
That's actually, I think that's actually a good policy. That weeds out a lot of BS.
Yeah. 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 It sure does. Yeah. But it's fun to me. We work in the rock and roll industry. It's cool.
His coworker's also 32. He chose 27 for the age that he feels.
So when you're actually at your 30s, it's a little bit more like what you imagine your 20s would be, maybe.
Yeah, and I think I get it from my parents, too. So my parents are in their mid-50s, but I feel like they think they're 35.
Yeah.
So it's not just like our generation.
No.
It's,
I don't think so.
Is there a time you can, like an my listeners love anecdotes, that you can pull out where you felt 24 recently?
I'm going to feel 24 tonight at our holiday party.
Yeah.
I guarantee that.
What's happening tonight at your holiday party?
Live band karaoke.
That's awesome.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great.
Okay, so what are you going to sing?
I think I might do some live. Maybe I'll do Lightning Crashes if they've got it.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
How about you?
I don't know.
You have a go-to karaoke favorite that you're going to just rock tonight?
I don't know if it's a favorite because it's not really a favorite song, but Bohemian Rhapsody always crushes.
I had a talk with my grandmother about this when I was like 13, and I remember her telling me, you always feel 13. It's just that at some point bills start coming in, and you know, the electric bill and the rent bill and this bill and that bill. And that's the only reason you know that you're an adult, but inside you still feel the exact same way. And I would say that's pretty accurate. I just feel like we're all pretending that we know what we're doing.
Here's a woman who looked to be in her 30s, and she told me she recently left her PR firm that she was working for to go off on her own, to start her own firm. And she needed a ride that day from her apartment on the north side to the coffee shop where she was going to be working that day. And even though she's got her own company now, she's got a number of employees on her payroll, number of clients who are paying her, she chose 13 as the age that she feels.
I think it's just a placeholder for any number or any age where we feel clueless and we feel like there's an authority in the world that knows better than us, that's going to lead us. And then you grow up to be that age and you just find out that that isn't the case. Everyone's just doing their best. And no one really knows what they're doing.
13 was a very, at least for me and like a lot of people around me, it was a very turbulent age.
Okay.
Middle school was certainly like cruel to some people and very kind to others or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great metaphor for adult life, honestly. Especially since when you come across people, you think that everything is calm and everything is good in their lives. And then as you get deeper and deeper into their lives, you find out that it really is true what they say, that everyone is just fighting a battle that you don't know anything about.
Can you give an example of, as an adult, a time when you felt like you were 13?
I guess my friendships still feel that way. I still feel like, I recently started saying that, there's that trope, fight like a girl, and I think guys wish that they could fight like girls because they can kill you with words, they can ruin your life with words, like, we don't even need fists, and I feel like you really have to still be so careful as to which people you surround yourself with, because girls will still be girls, and act like 13-year-old girls that will want to ruin your life.
Emotionally.
Yeah.
Is this something that you'd be willing to share, like the anecdote of when this happened as an adult?
I won't get that specific.
Okay, no worries. No worries at all.
Swing and a miss there. It's hard to actually fully connect with her because for much of this ride, it was a Lyft line ride. We had another guy in the car who was acting super intense because he'd forgotten some really important documents back at his house. So we had to kind of pause our conversation until that guy got out.
I do keep learning lessons as I get older, and I think back on certain things and I'm like, oh, well, I wouldn't do that again. So in that sense, I'm a little older. But I feel like as you get older, you just find out how little you know, and as a result, you're just more confused. So, yeah, it's that childish age forever for me, baby.
Do you feel your age?
Not really.
Here's a guy I picked up from this apartment complex in Bronzeville that the Lyft app keeps bringing me back to over and over again. And from what I've gathered, this apartment building is a mix of senior citizens and students.
I am 23 now.
And do you feel 23?
I don't think so.
How old would you say you feel?
Maybe I still feel I am a 13 and 14-year-old kid.
He's a student at a local college. He's studying computer science, and he moved to Chicago from India a year and a half ago.
The way I am 10 years ago, and now the way I am right now, is the same. So I don't think I'm aging with the age. Yeah. So that's why I feel I'm still a 13-year-old. My thinking pattern, my way of living, hasn't changed much in last 10 years, so that's all. So I don't have any adulthood stress or those kind of issues to think about or deal with. I'm just happy. I'm a happy soul. That's it.
I'm glad to hear that. When you say your thinking patterns are the same,
yeah,
what do you mean by that?
I mean, I think it's better we go to a coffee shop and discuss these things. But yeah, thinking pattern in the sense, one example which I'm going to give you is about the money. I was thinking the same about the money when I was 10 years ago, and even now the same. I mean, I just I see a lot of people who are selfish and who keeps money in their bank account without spending and those kind of things. But I deal with the I don't give a lot of importance to money, so I just take money whatever I need, I spend. And that's all. I give off my money to... I don't give. I help people like by giving money if they really need. So this kind of habit was there since I was childhood, and it's still the same. So people used to tell me, so when you start earning money, your thinking pattern, your perception about money will change. But I started earning from last 6 months, but it hasn't changed. So I'm still the same. And I'm the same human being. Money or anything didn't change me. So I don't ever want to be a grown up, because your thinking pattern, your living and everything changes as you grow. But I love the kind of living which I am now. So I just want to continue as long as it doesn't trouble me or give any problems. So it feels nice to be a kid.
No kids, no mortgage, still in school. It's a pretty ideal combination to still be able to feel like you're a child, right? And I feel like for this generation, at least based on what I've seen, the early 20s have become this extension of the teenage years. And I think a lot of people would agree this is a relatively new phenomenon. My parents, for example, they were married when they were both 21 years old. And three out of my four grandparents were under the age of 21 as well when they got married. My dad's mom was only 19.
I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not even like dating anyone. I'm not married. Like, because half of my friends are single and the other half are married and with like kids on the way. So it's like a very awkward time in life.
I picked this woman up from an apartment building in Old Town, and she needed a quick ride to the next neighborhood to the north, which is Lincoln Park.
I do not feel my age at all. I'm 29, and I feel like I'm 22. Probably because I talk to my parents all the time, and I consult them on, like, not every decision I make. That would be ridiculous. But, like, important decisions. Like, you know, I left my job, actually, at, I don't know if I should say where, but it was a large CPG company here in Chicago.
What does CPG mean?
Consumer packaged goods.
That was a job she'd been wanting to leave for a while before actually pulling the trigger.
The company I worked for was like very cutthroat, and I was like, we're selling shitty food to people. We're not investment bankers. I'm not really sure why we're operating like this. But it just wasn't for me.
She knew that. But there was another big factor that kept her there.
But I was like, oh, my dad will be so disappointed, but like this, I'm miserable and I can't do this job anymore. And so I had to like work up the courage to ask my dad, like, Dad, I hate my job. Can I like leave it? And he was like, I don't know why you're asking me. He was like, you know, if you think you can find another job and, you know, you need help for a few months, great. But, you know, you can't be playing around all day. But I was like, I was 28 when I left, but I turned 29 in October. And I was like, it's like crazy. Or I just like really care about like their opinion on who I date or just like anything. So I'm actually, that's something I'm trying to like work on. It's like, I love them and we're all very close, but like figure out what's best for me. So no, I don't feel my age.
Think about it though. Are there many people out there that don't seek parental approval on some level?
And like my dad's never like intense about stuff, but I've just always wanted his approval. My mom is like easier to gain approval from, but yeah, no, I also don't feel my age because I still like to like go out and have fun. I mean, I guess, you know, adults, whatever. I don't consider myself an adult. I'm a little bit immature. My humor might be a little bit immature, but whatever. I am who I am. So.
She and I agreed on there being a distinct change across recent generations.
I look at like my grandparents and like, you know, what they did was great. Like they made lots of sacrifices, but now people like will go to Thailand or like, you know, like they're, I don't know. I think things just have changed. So
no,
I, yeah.
I know what you mean. It's like my grandparents.
29, my mom and my dad had two kids and they lived in the suburbs and like had like a cookie cutter suburban home. And I rent an apartment and live in the city and it's just crazy. So yeah, it's different. It's very different.
All right, when we come back, I have two very memorable backseat riders to introduce you to. The first, because of her very unique name.
Hey.
Hi.
Awesome?
Yes.
Is your name really awesome?
Yes.
And then next, because of why I was picking him up from a hospital that day.
It was tough. It's like, your family has to be really on board, and it was a process, like, getting my wife to that point.
Hi, this is Ben Domenech, the host of the Federalist Radio Hour. We're a daily show coming to you 5 days a week from Washington, D.C., where we interview our nation's top journalists, politicians, authors, chefs, economists, entertainers, and more. If you're looking for a contrarian discussion on news, politics, or culture, give us a listen and subscribe at PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or at Apple Podcasts.
Do you feel your age?
Do I feel my age? That's a good question. Especially with everything that just kind of happened in the last couple of weeks, I kind of feel like I got like this new, I don't want to say a lease on life, but definitely a new perspective.
Turns out that just 2 weeks earlier, he and his dad,
I'm 31 and he's 40 years older than me, so he's 71,
shared an experience.
2 weeks ago on the 28th of November, my dad and I underwent a kidney transplant surgery here at, and he'd been diagnosed with end-stage renal failure and he was on dialysis for over a year, so it was kind of really hard for the whole family to see him in that process, and finally did the surgery.
Can you tell me about that day? The day of the procedure.
Oh, totally. Gosh, I remember. So I took an Uber from my wife and I, we live in River North, and we were leaving our apartment, and it was just one of those, like, really weird feelings of, like, gosh, I don't know what state we'll be in when we come back to this apartment in a few days. Like, you know, and of course, like, the thought runs through your mind, like, will I even make it back to this apartment in a few days? And it was tough. It's like, your family has to be really on board, and it was a process, like, getting my wife to that point. But you know, once we realized, like, we looked at the risks, we looked at like the benefits of like what could happen, it was like it became more and more obvious, like, this was something that I really needed to do, wanted to do. But that day, I remember we got to the hospital, like, my sister, she flew in from California, surprised us all. She was like, I wanted to be here with you guys. My brother was here from DC. Like, my dad was there. I mean, obviously my dad was there. Like, my mom came. The operation itself, like, for me, I was asleep. It went by very fast. But for my wife, like, those 4 hours, she said, like, it felt like 4 weeks to her. And people would come up to her and kind of tell her, like, oh, it's okay, don't worry. And she was like, I don't need to hear this right now. And she wanted to, like, escape from everyone. It was a really tough time for her. They check you in. They take you to this place where they tell you, we're going to give you something now that will... So you change into the hospital gown, and, you know, I took my wedding ring off, put my phone away. They give you this drug that they tell you... It's called Versed. It's really interesting because they tell you, you know, everything from this moment onward you probably won't remember. And you hear those words, and it's the weirdest feeling. I'd never been under anesthesia before. Not even local anesthesia, so general anesthesia, where they kind of shut everything off, was like really scary just to think about that. I don't know if you've ever gone through it.
I have, yeah.
Yeah, so it was just a weird feeling when they tell you you won't remember anything, and the next thing I know, they're like, you know, okay, now start breathing oxygen through this mask, and then that's all I remember. That's all I remember, and I remember waking up to them, like, saying my name a few times, and the first question I had was, like, why isn't anyone doing the surgery? Like, when are we going to do it? It was really weird. And then they were like, no, you did it. And I was like, is everything okay? Like, any complications? They were like, you had a textbook surgery. Everything was super, super well. Then I was like, what about my dad? Like, they're like, oh, he's still in surgery, because the recipient's surgery is usually longer. It's about 7 hours. Mine was 4 hours. So, gosh, I still remember the moment where they were like, hey, you know, your kidney is in him now, and it's working great. I was, like, in the hospital room. And they were like, he's going to be in, you know, the room next door any minute now. So I remember that moment. It was really special. First of all, I felt like it wasn't even, like, mine. I was like, it's my dad's, or it's our kidney almost. It was like, cool, it's, he, and you know what's really interesting? Like, they, when you get a kidney, they don't remove your other kidneys. Like, they just keep adding. So in theory, you could die with, like, 8 kidneys in you if you needed multiple transplants.
So he's still got his...
He still has his other two. And it's so interesting the way the body works, like... They remove mine, right? And then there's this void in my abdomen, and then my other organs kind of just, like, move around, and they fill that space. Similarly, in my dad's body, like, they just move things around, and they put the new kidney in, and it just finds a home, and it starts working immediately. Immediately. Like, the second his body got it, he was able to produce more urine, and then the doctors were like, you know, he's so talkative and he has so much energy now, which is great, because when a patient's on dialysis and they have kidney failure, one of the, you know, the side effects is, like, way less energy and high blood pressure. And it's really, really amazing to see such a change. And they were like, you know, he wants to see you. And I was like, of course I want to see him. Like, usually the donors and the recipients don't see each other because... I mean, that's just typically how it is, I guess. But in this case, like, it was my father, so obviously definitely wanted to see him. And they wheeled him into my room, and he was on his bed, and I was on my bed. And I remember all he was saying was, like, thank you so much. And, gosh, like, the whole family was there, and there wasn't, like, a dry eye in the room. It was a really... I don't think I can ever forget that moment. And it made, like, all the hardship I was feeling just disappear.
At this point in the ride, I ask him some very specific questions about the procedure itself and the aftermath. It's not too extreme. It's not going to be overly graphic for most of you, I'm guessing. But quick warning, if you are sensitive to hearing about surgeries, or if you're eating right now or something like that, you might want to fast forward to the next passenger.
I'm not going to lie, it was super weird because it was the first time in my life I ever had to have a catheter. And that was, like, really weird because it connects directly to your bladder. I'm going to give you TMI now. Connects, like, directly to your bladder, so you don't really, like, feel the need to go to the bathroom. It just kind of happens automatically.
Okay.
So that's what happens, like, during the surgery and after. And then after that, like, after day one, they take it out and they're like, you know, we need you to start going to the bathroom on your own, like, to make sure everything's working fine. And it was, like, you know, you have all these meds, like, things are numb, and it's weird at first, but, like, now, even a few days after, everything is pretty much back to normal, which is another reason I feel, like, such a strong advocate for organ donation. Like, you get your life back as a donor. I would say, like, 95% of the time, there's always the risk of complications, but you get your life back. Like, I look at my dad, and I see, like, I wish I could have been, like, I wish that my kidney was, like, the end of his problems, like, after him getting mine. But he still has to, like, watch his diet. He still has to take anti-rejection medicine every day for the rest of his life to make sure that, you know, his body doesn't reject this foreign object. He has to make sure, like, his sugar levels and salt levels are all in check. And the donor really pretty much has the same diet. They tell you to continue exercising, hydrate. But you feel the same. The only time I ever felt anything different was when I told you that the body kind of, like, fills the space. like when you're sleeping and you switch positions, like you kind of feel things moving around initially. And yeah, the doctor told me like that's your organs like kind of like readjusting. But after that, like I feel the same. The effects of the surgery, I kind of feel like I did like 100 sit-ups, and so I feel a little sore in my abdomen, but that goes away with each day. And like I told you, I'm on week 2 now, so it's like almost gone.
He gave his left kidney, which most donors do because apparently it's more transferable than our right kidneys. He says that has to do with the placement of the veins on the left side of the body.
So the incision, it's called laparoscopic incision, which is, I guess like decades ago, they did what's called a big open incision where they would cut across your entire belly. But now they do this thing where they make like keyhole-like incisions, very small. And I think I have a total of 6. They make a few small ones, and then they make one like larger one. Not even that large. It's like 3 inches right below your belly button. So the small incisions, they insert cameras. So the entire surgery was done like with camera. Like everything was like witnessed on a screen. They input another incision to inflate gas in your stomach, so like your whole stomach kind of inflates, so the doctor has, like the surgeon has room to do what he needs to do. And so yeah, there's a total of like 5 small incisions, and the 6th one is like the large one I told you about 3 inches right below your belly button, where the surgeon finally puts his or her hand directly inside you and pulls the kidney out.
After the surgery, he spent the next 2 days in the hospital. His dad spent the next 5.
Would you encourage people to donate to strangers?
So it's a very personal decision, and some people, like I would read online that if someone said they were donating to a stranger, people would be like, why? Like, are you crazy? Like, you don't even know the person, or like, why are you even donating in the first place if they find out you're donating to someone that you know? But like you said, knowing what I know now, there's so many people that like, you know, are on these lists waiting for kidneys, and you could really give them another chance at living, and it's at very little cost to you. I would encourage it. And they always say, like, well, what happens if I end up needing, like, my other kidney? You know, it could happen, but, like, the chances of that are slim. And what they do is they test you, like, extensively. Like, I was tested for about 3 months to make sure that, like, I could really donate, that there wouldn't be a problem. Like, you know, they do as much predicting as they can that, like, I would not have any issues with my kidney in the future. So yeah.
How long was the process between when you decided, yes, I'm going to do it,
yeah,
and when you actually did it? Because you said there was like 3 months.
Yeah, yeah. So initially, I got married a year ago, and my aunt came from overseas, because she was like, you know, let me donate. I'm a sister. Like, I'll be a really good match. And so everyone was kind of on board with that. She got tested. She stayed in the country for a while, and they ultimately told her, like, while you are a match, your kidney has kind of, like, seen better days. Mm-hmm. So, because she was older. So then my mom got tested, and it was the same situation with her. Like, by chance, she was a good match, but she was too old. So there's 4 of us siblings, and we were kind of like, what can we do? Like, why don't we get tested? Like, none of us knew anything about organ donation, but we're like, why not? And so one of my sisters and I, we decided to get tested, and we were both really, really good matches, and we had really good, healthy kidneys. The only issue was that I guess there's, like, DNA markers, and they said, like, you know, I have more, I'm, like, stronger match. Like, we're both good matches, but I have, like, more markers. So if I were to donate, my dad would have to take less anti-rejection medication afterwards. So then it was, like, really, really easy for us to narrow it down and
not have to play rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, exactly. Like, told work. They were super, super supportive. And, yeah, that's kind of how we went.
He says he spent the last 2 weeks thinking about what an advocate for organ donation that he's become and that he wishes he'd become sooner.
You know, yesterday my wife was getting her new state ID at the DMV, and I went with her, and I was overhearing. They ask everybody, like, do you want to be an organ donor? And I don't know, I felt like this tinge of sadness when I would hear people be like, oh, no, no, no. And it's funny because, like I said, on mine, it doesn't say that I am one. I never checked it. But, like, not having gone through this experience, I almost wanted to reach over and be like, hey, you should. You should consider it.
Okay, everybody, here's the grand finale for this week's episode. And in this case, there was no need to break the ice with a thoughtful but uninvasive question. I got this ride request near Hyde Park from a woman whose Lyft profile name was awesome. And I'm not just saying she had an awesome name. I mean, that's what actually popped up as her name on the Lyft app. So I pull up to an apartment building and she starts walking toward the car. She's already got a smile on her face.
Hey.
Hi.
Awesome?
Yes.
Is your name really awesome?
Yes.
That's the best. That's awesome. I mean, I'm not... I didn't even mean to say that's awesome.
No, no. It's very common.
Apparently, most of her Lyft drivers react that way when they see her name pop up on the app. Turns out, indeed, her mother gave her that name.
My mom was a hippie.
What has it been like growing up with the name Awesome?
It's pretty awesome. I get the same reaction all the time. All the time. Just, it puts people in a really good mood. So I always kind of deal with good people. It makes it hard for me, though, to be awesome all the time. But I try to be. I try to be good to people.
Because the pressure's on you to live up to your name.
Absolutely. It is.
In school, what was it like?
I got made more fun of my last name, being so they would call me Bozo, and that just stuck. And then being biracial, but being called white girl, those were the names that they preferred to call me. So it really didn't matter then, you know.
What's the story that your mom told you? You mentioned she was a hippie. What's the story that your mom tells you about how she chose that name?
Drugs. Drugs.
Drugs?
Yeah.
What year were you born?
87.
87.
Yep.
And so did she tell you what the reaction was, like at the hospital or anything?
She didn't stick around. She just kind of named me and went on her way.
What do you mean?
That was it. I was raised by my family. Her grandmother.
Her grandmother?
Yeah.
So, do you know your mom?
No, not really.
Okay.
Her sister raised me. That's who I call my mom in real life. But behind the name, that mom, she's lived a life for sure. It's a very interesting one I would like to learn about.
You'd like to learn more about her?
Yeah.
And do you know her whereabouts right now?
I hear locations every now and then, but she's not really good at communicating, so it's kind of hard to talk to her about it and meet up with her.
Got it. So you've never really, when's the last time you had a conversation with her?
Maybe about 5 years ago.
Okay. And focusing on the name though, have you ever asked her about it specifically?
That conversation 5 years ago was, it was more so like, who am I mostly? But we didn't go into deep detail. That's why I wanted to meet her so we could talk about it.
Okay. So that conversation's still out there.
Yeah.
Okay. So elementary school was, and they changed it to Bozo. What about middle school?
Middle school was mostly about race, white girl. Like, I had a friend named Sherelle, and this is funny. We were like best friends, so they'll call me Milk. So they'll call her cereal and Milk. So I got stuck with Milk. So that was something that stuck to about 10th grade. And then after that, that was it.
So even in high school, you got called Milk.
No, in high school, it was awesome.
It was awesome?
Yeah, but it wasn't a big deal.
What was the...
Hated high school.
What was the teacher's... Okay, so on the first day... What's up?
No, I was telling you.
Is this cool right here?
Yeah.
What was the teacher's reaction on the first day? You know how they're like taking attendance and meeting everyone for the first time?
I mean, it was just like any name, just like Lakeisha or something strange. So it wasn't like a big deal to them. I didn't go to a school with common names anyway, so it wasn't like a new thing. It didn't start becoming a big deal really until here. So I moved to Chicago from Houston.
because that would all happen in Houston.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, when she walked up to the car that day, she was already smiling, and it was almost as if she knew I was going to ask her about the name Awesome.
Like, you walked up to the car with a smile on your face. Did you know I was going to ask you about the name?
No, I was more intrigued at the Subaru because I was thinking about the commercial.
Oh, what commercial?
The Subaru commercials. They're always, like, cool, happy commercials. So when I saw your car, I was like, oh, this is a cool guy.
You're a marketer's dream. You're a marketer's dream. So what is there any go-to story that you have that you can share about being named Awesome that, like, my listeners will want to know?
That I get to say I'm fucking awesome.
I really just wanted to leave it there because that would have been a perfect soundbite to end on. But for the sake of completeness, here's one more soundbite from Awesome.
Do you feel your age? You mentioned you're 30. Do you feel 30?
I do not. Not even close.
No surprise there, right? Of course she doesn't feel her age. And as always, I would love to hear your take on this week's episode. So if you haven't already, join up with us in the Backseat Rider community on Facebook. That is where listeners talk about what is said on the show. All you have to do is search Facebook groups for Backseat Rider, request to join, and myself or Beth, who's a group moderator, will approve you. Couple last-minute housekeeping things. If you want to see photos of passengers from this episode, including Awesome, and other episodes of Backseat Rider, be sure to follow me on social media. I'm at Anthony Ponce on Facebook, and I'm at Anthony Ponce TV on Twitter and Instagram. Last name is spelled P-O-N-C-E. And also, my weekly reminder, and I say this with hat in hand, Lyft is not a sponsor of this show. It doesn't have anything to do with the content. But if you haven't signed up for Lyft yet and you want to help me out, support the podcast, please sign up for Lyft using my promo code. It is Backseat Rider, all one word. And that is good for new users of the Lyft app. That code is good for $50 in free ride credit. Backseat Rider is edited by Bob Gilmartin. And also thank you so much to WTTW and WTTW.com for their support of this podcast. Look for new episodes of Backseat Rider every Wednesday at podcastone.com, Podcast One app. And if you have an iPhone, make sure you are subscribed on Apple Podcasts. Backseat Rider.